next case is in the interest of charity. So before we get started, perhaps we should discuss allocation.
Jeff, I think as the appellant, I'm going to go first. My understanding was I had 10 minutes. I'm sure I'm not going to shut them all.
I represent the water, and I'm willing to share. If we've got 10 minutes between the three appellants, then three parents, I'm willing to have 10 minutes.
And judges, with respect to this, Ms. McChee, I've spoken to counsel prior to the record today, and we agreed that there will be essentially a loss of time, which should be slightly favored by standards. And so what happens to Ms. McChee, I largely summarize in the case of three parents.
All right, so we're going to try to keep the three parents who are represented today. Somewhere in that 10-minute allocation, you have to go a little over, but enough. Okay. All right. Let's go.
Thank you, and good morning. If it pleases the court, my name is Kevin Ryan. I represent the appellant in this case. As the court knows from the briefs, this was a situation where I was representing a father that was doing almost everything that was asked of him at the time, not only at the filing of this termination of parental rights, but certainly at the time that he went to trial back in August of last year. Now, back in November of the year before, 2014, the court had ordered that reasonable services for reunification continue with my client, the appellant, because he was making an effort. He was doing everything that he was supposed to do. Reasonable efforts were not asked for either the mother or the father in this case. Those things that my client was doing was testing negative for all substances, getting his evaluations, both chemical and psychological, doing his meds, NA meetings, visiting well with his children. And by the time the trial came around in August, he had moved out of the home of the mother for over a year at that point in time and had safe and adequate housing on his own.
Was he living with the homeless spouse at the time of trial?
At the time of trial, yes, that is correct.
And what evidence was there about the stability of that home?
There wasn't any evidence necessarily about stability or instability of it. The stability, I would argue, I think I argued to the court at the time, was that he was there for over a year at that point in time. And NFC that had gone out there found that it was a good relationship at that time, and that everything was going fine. She had a son who was the same age, roughly the same age as my client's son, and they played together, etc. So in that amount of time, not only was he doing everything that he was supposed to do, unfortunately, he really wasn't receiving any reasonable services as were ordered by the court. And under examination by myself, the NFC worker said that the only thing that was offered to him really were family team meetings and case management, because he was doing everything he thought he was supposed to do. And I asked her about that position we had taken with her when I asked her if she recalled being at a Concord meeting or someone asked, is there anything else that this father is supposed to be doing? And she said, no, she's done everything he's got to do. And I said, well, what then is the problem? Why are you recommending termination of parental rights? And she said it was essentially a failure for him to understand the proceedings or something to that nature. But whatever that does mean, the fact is he did understand how following work. And in every case, especially a termination of parental rights case, it's my view that if you are given orders as to what you can do to better yourself as a parent, and you follow those orders, and representatives of the state come into court and say that you have followed those orders, you do not deserve to be put in the position of the other two parents for whom reasonable efforts have ceased. You were allowed to go on, and you should have been allowed to go on for a reason. And for that, I'd ask the court to consider that.
Wasn't there a problem with our client to go back and forth with his ex-wife and his wife? There was evidence of domestic abuse. and moved to Oklahoma. Oklahoma for the area, and he's not otherwise involved with children, was that part of the record as well?
Well, that's part of what they had to do in this case was to go back quite a way. Domestic violence incidents that they're talking about, I believe the testimony was some 5 or 6 years prior. Also,
domestic abuse therapy or anger management therapy of any kind.
That was not ordered by the court. And again, that's something he would have been willing to do anything. He would have been willing to do any services that were asked of him. All he can do is the ones that he was asked to do. That gets me back to that Concord mediation meeting where he asked, is there anything else he can do? And the answer was no. So with that, yes, you're right. And as far as the trip to Oklahoma, that was after the youngest baby was born. The state saw fit for it to be okay for that child to live with another at that time. He went down to work for a couple of months and came back, and that's about the time he's filed the counsel. Since then, he did everything he was asked to do. So that, if there's no more questions, I can have a question. Thank you.
My name is Sandy Starr, and I'm the attorney for the mother in this case, Mary Anderson. Your Honor, this is a difficult case, I understand that. This is a case where we have a mother who has admittedly some mental health issues and who has even a board of mental health commitment for all this. But the records show that when she was on her medication with her mandatory, she can be a healthy woman. This case was filed on May 23rd, 2013. And the court ordered the mother to do certain things. The records showed that she had 3 children. She had Charity, she had Max, and Donovan, who was born in April of 2014. The court ordered her to do certain things on May 23rd, 2013, and she followed those orders, and she was healthy for a long period of time. The court ordered that she should have visits with her daughter, Charity, and her son, Max. Unfortunately, she did not have visits with Charity for many months. She was doing the things that she was ordered to do. She was healthy. She was doing all the services. Her daughter did not want to visit her mom. There was no effort on the part of the state to provide services that would enable this mother to have quarterly visits with her daughter. The child, Charity, was in a foster home with the woman with whom she had been previously placed, and the mother truly believed that there was parental alienation happening in the foster home. She repeatedly reached out to case professionals to say, how can we get this visitation going? And she was met with no assistance from the state. Donovan was born in April of 2014. So for at least a year, the mother had been doing very well. State did not ask to have Donovan removed from her home, but actually said Donovan should stay with Mary, she's doing so well. They put intensive family preservation services in the home. Those people met with Mary several times a week. Those people reached out to the case manager and said, how can we get mom going for this mom with Charity? Mary's individual therapist, Terry Essel, reached out to the state. She said, I'm working with mom. She's meeting all the treatment goals. The only goal she's not meeting is reducing her stress because she hasn't had visitation with her daughter for so many years. At TPR, the caseworker admitted that she had full counsel for the mother and the mother that she was going to get a new therapist for the child because she didn't think there was enough happening in therapy with the child to encourage the child to visit with her mom.
Let me interrupt. Charity was placed and removed 3 different times.
Yes, Max,
2 different times.
That's correct.
That doesn't indicate stability.
She is, like I said, this is a difficult case. This is a woman who has had mental health issues for many years. On those occasions, she probably had some issues. She did start receiving a board of mental health commitment where she had to get shots, which actually stabilized her. She did comply with all the previous court orders. And when this case came before the juvenile court, she was placed on a clinic, and it had been over a year of stability. she still wasn't having any visits with her daughter.
Counsel, isn't that the bigger issue here is that after Don had returned, your client stopped participating in the VA services?
My client did testify that she had a breakdown. She had filed a request for contempt to have the child removed from the foster home and have a therapist. We had a hearing in September of 2014. There was some testimony on the stand that the child charity had a home. Donovan's not going to say we're going to get Donovan into the room at the foster home. There's a bed already for him. She testified she had no breakdown. And she did. She never was able to get back on her feet. She continued to reach out to the department for assistance. She actually lost her housing. She was provided absolutely no assistance. The caseworker said, go to a homeless shelter. So, yes, Your Honor, there was a breakdown in 2014 in September. I am asking this court to consider that one separately from the actual charity. I think the court can do that. I did a little review. Donovan was born in April 2014. TPR was filed about 2 months later, in September of 2015. I would ask the court, particularly for Donovan, because I didn't know what we were doing at the time. I think that her breakdown, in large part, was caused by the inaction of the state to provide her with court-ordered services. Visitation with your daughter is extremely crucial. And I don't think that there were reasonable efforts by, in this case, to provide services for a child alone. Child didn't know her mom was doing well for a year. I don't think the evidence showed that the therapist didn't share with the child mom's progress. The child didn't know that Mary and Dennis had been separated for a year. That wasn't shared with the child or her. So based on a de novo review, Your Honor, I guess that you, particularly Donovan, say that the mom should have some more.
Thank you. So I take it that means 10 minutes.
10 minutes.
So
10 minutes.
So what I will have to go 3 minutes. Would that be sufficient?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Tyler Barton. I'm an attorney for Curtis Ring. Eugene's biological father of a minor child, Sherry. I would encourage the court, because of the number of parties involved in this case, to view each of the three parents separately. Mary, Dennis, and Curtis are substantially situated differently, not only factually, but procedurally. The procedural posture of, for example, Mary's case is important to note because Mary became court involved substantially prior to Curtis' court involvement. And Curtis' court involvement took the form of a no-fault pleading that was amended further. Curtis's situation is very unfortunate. Curtis suffered a work-related injury when a nail gun he was using while standing on scaffolding discharged went into his head. He fell from the scaffolding and upon falling from the scaffolding suffered a stroke. He went to a facility called the Manual Functional Handicap Center and participated initially in a service called Skills Rehab. Skilled rehab at Custom Apple Cuts from his handling, the worker that worked for Curtis, was a situation for improving someone from physical non-functioning to the ability to function. Testimony then went that Curtis went to a separate part of Denverville's facility, called long-term care. It was in long-term care where he was able to resume some ambulatory movement. Now, he was confined to a wheelchair, and he did have stroke symptomology, such as the restricted movement of his left arm and left leg, and that's in the record. But he did have the ability to function cognitively, and he did request, through his social worker, mainly the ability to communicate with his daughter. He requested further, and more specifically, the ability to have visitation with his daughter. The record in this case reflects that those requests were unanswered. Testimony both from Ms. Hamilton and the NFC work, and specifically assigned to this case, were that those services weren't provided to Mr. Narducci's request, and in fact, no such services were put in place, whether we view them as simply visitation services or any other kinds of services.
This wasn't there also testimony and representation. He was offered opportunity to visit and did not respond. He was not taking advantage of it.
Well, there is testimony to that effect, but I would beg to differ with the analysis that he didn't respond. It appears to me, when I look at the record, that the communication was never from the caseworker in this case, Megan Yost, to directly Mr. Narducci. It was always through a third party.
Although it's not part of the record, there was some discussion in cross-examination that it was easy for anyone who wished to speak to Mr. Narducci to do so directly. I think if we look at this record, when we look at the totality of the testimony of Ms. Yost, her philosophy essentially was, Mr. Narducci is not going to get better, and because he's not going to get better, he's not going to be able to hear. And the state, when they proceeded on December 1st with the second motion for termination, they listed several grounds for the termination, but the record itself only reflects that they focused on the abandonment component. And I will submit this on the contents of the brief, but I strongly encourage the court to analyze whether an injury constitutes an intentional act by a parent that results in abandonment. The testimony in the record was that Mr. Narducci was making medical and physical progress, and that progress could have allowed him to resume a relationship. The testimony is also that between 2004 and 2013, prior to the accident, he did maintain an ongoing relationship with his daughter.
Is that credibility and weight to be given, and our standard of review of the trial court's finding was limited to the fact that she and Lamberty saw on her witnesses determination?
Well, certainly this court's standard of review is very clear. The trial judge does analyze the credibility of the witnesses through direct observation. However, that is the counterpoint to that is that with respect to the medical situation, with respect to Mr. Narducci's intent to resume a relationship when he had the physical ability to do so, that's uncontroversial.
Thank you. If you need a little more, that's fine, since you have three parents.
Could you start the last part and ask first? It's troublesome to have an individual who's injured in a work-related accident. Are we are we making the standard higher on the situations than it should be?
I don't believe so. First, Jennifer Clark for Deputy County Attorney for the State of Nebraska. In regards to that argument, I think that yes, is it unfortunate? But again, it's not the child's fault in regards to what happened to her father. I understand that the difficulty it is in regards to the circumstances revolving around that type of situation. But again, there is more than just an abandonment argument that was made for the father. It was also sub two, also sub seven. And in regards to those different points, everything kind of always comes together. Yes, this individual did not request to have visits. He didn't respond, whether it was because of his own inability to do so, because of his injury. But you have the fact that you have a child who's been in foster care numerous times. You have an individual who had an unfortunate accident, and at the end, you have a child who was invested in some type of permanency. And that's
the only solution to termination.
Your the fact that Charity, her age, the fact that we're at this point where she has been removed several different times, the state believes is that the only due type of guardianship, which would be another permanency objective for her, would only be necessary if a parent would be able to put themselves into a position eventually to parent that child. That's always the viewpoint that I've always taken when I look at either adoption or guardianship, either guardianship of a child who is 16, 17 years old. They don't want to go back to their parent. The parent doesn't want to take care of them, so they do a guardianship. Or if a child is maybe even a little bit younger, but there's parent needed some more time to do what they need to do, whether it be sobriety, mental health reasons, they need to get back on their feet for financial reasons. So they do a guardianship to afford them an opportunity a little bit more time, but their child doesn't have to wait to foster care during that time to actually have a little bit of stability and then come back and try to do that. In regards to this case, that just is not going to be feasible. You're never going to have an individual who's going to be able to parent that child. And unfortunately, just like in cases where there is severe mental health, that
really the parent never did anything for the child. There's always going to have to be that, that unfortunate result of we're going to have to look at terminating rights so that the child has that opportunity to be in pregnancy. Especially again due to the fact that this child has been so much, she deserves to have some stability in her life. And that's exactly what that therapist said, is that she needs that. That is an absolute paramount to her life. I mean, she has been in and out so many times, three times, you have Max twice, not even born during the course of the case. You have children that have been subjected to a lot of instability, a lot of abuse, a lot of violence in their lives. They deserve to have that permanency. It's just unfortunate for the father, for Terry, that he's unable to provide that.
Where was he during the first two times to charge the children?
I'll have to be honest with you. I don't know if he was ever filed on, and then they just were able to reunify back with the mother. For charity. Actually, was not around. Obviously, that's also very concerning due to the fact that charity underwent so much instability and so much problems in her home life with her mother and with her, having a dentist around and all the everything that went on with that family, as she testified to herself. I think it is also kind of be indicative of the father's ability to provide for her child.
She was first removed. I recall 2007.
Yes.
And then this injury, was this around 2012, 2013, somewhere in there?
I believe so.
It's Mr. Martin's report indicates the record needs to suggest that there was regular contact between 2006 and 2013.
Because there's always that for a child, they are being told that I'm not really mom, I'm not really dad, I'm just your guardian, and I'm just here to watch over you and take care of you and everything. There's always that possibility of a dad coming back in. To me, it does not provide a firm notion for a child, especially if they're, it's always out there. Now, whether or not Charity knows that, I don't know if Charity has ever had a discussion with a therapist in regards to having a guardianship or having an adoption. But in my opinion, in this type of situation, what would be the point of doing a guardianship? Because this individual is not ever going to be able to be put into that position to have a parent with his child.
Isn't it troubling a little bit to terminate a person's parental rights because of disabilities that impairs their ability to do all the things the state's expecting of that person's parent? When it's beyond control to some extent.
Your Honor, I actually equate it to sub-5, which is a mental health issue, which, again, it's not their fault. They were most likely born with that issue, but the legislature and the courts have affirmed that when it comes to sub-5, that beyond the fact that you have no ability to determine whether or not you're going to have enough troubles, that would hinder your ability to parent a child. It's not fair to that child that they should be suspended in foster care.
But in those cases, there's often other evidence, poor behavior, or being neglectful, or having horrible homes. There's usually other evidence. In this case, I'm not sure that that other evidence.
And that's fine. Like I said, if you have a child that's been in and out of foster care several times. We have a child who has undergone a lot of therapy to deal with these issues. And again, even if she had contact with her father, what was her father during this time frame? Why was he not trying to remove her from this kind of situation, knowing that the child had been removed several times? Again, I don't know. Right, I think the history is kind of indicative of what type of relationship or what type of parent that he had been prior to the accident. Again, accident's unfortunate, but I don't think that should hinder the state from going forward to terminating rights, especially if you have that history of charity. And we do have all that testimony that actually charity did testify, which is you know, I think in regards to the mother, I think the court pretty much laid it out that her instability, ups and downs, is very indicative of whether or not she should be given more time, because you know what, she's never demonstrated really a length of time in regards to that sleeper.
So if in this case the dad had been actively trying to get custody of his daughter who was dying early and had actually been a parent, if there's evidence of that, of his daughter, and then this accident, would you have a different discussion on this session?
Possibly. I'll be honest with you, in my case, so I don't know what the original idea was behind that. But I know in my several years of doing this, my feelings in regards to the guardianship over an adoption, there are also several reasons. One would be to try to maintain that relationship. Again, what relationship is there? Because as previously stated, and the court even acknowledged, that he kind of stayed mum when he came back to be in contact with his child.
Before you run out of time, let's address Dennis and his argument that after returning from Oklahoma, that he has been actively participating in the confinement that he's finding.
To some extent, I say believe that. But again, we have an individual who is pretty much out of patient home. Testimony from the NFC worker was that she even tried to find him, tried to get him involved, wasn't involved. He then realized that there was additional things that were going to be filed against him. Then he shows back up to decide that he wants to come to death. Now, it's not even just the fact that the state doesn't believe he has fully complied with all the orders. Because again, he's supposed to be engaging in patient therapy. And from the information that was provided by Max's therapist, again, he's dealing with a lot of issues himself, and that includes the domestic violence, a lot of those issues that need to be addressed, and they haven't been addressed. They haven't been addressed to the point where you, or someone could feel comfortable that he's internalized that information, that it's going to be demonstrated. Again, is it really stability when he's with someone that says it was home? Is it really stability when he's now making some efforts, but it hasn't been a long-term notion? Again, it just started once this termination was filed. And although I know the Supreme Court has stated that, those efforts after the filing can also be utilized, I think clearly the evidence for it also kind of gives that balancing act of, wait a minute, you're only starting doing things once you filed, look at all this time that you were given an opportunity to do so. You were out of the state, you weren't involved, you weren't seeing your child, you weren't doing what needed to be done to eliminate the reason why these children were removed, why there's such a history for their child, and what needed to be done to remain.
Can you also address Ms. Scurry's argument about perhaps there should be more time in the mother?
I understand the need of wanting to maybe get a reboot. Starts to strain, but again, as the court already noted, there is a strain for this matter. So we have three removals of one of the children, two removals for the second, and now we have Donovan. I don't think it's fair that Donovan has to undergo and be in foster care for such a lengthy time, again, just like his siblings, because mom wants enough. She's given that opportunity. She's had years of services given to her. Again, it's unfortunate that she had one of them. But it's not the children's fault she has them out. So he deserves to have that permanency. And Donovan is no different than the other two children. He deserves to have some permanency. And with history and the fact that the mother could do it for a little bit and then she'd fall back. She can do it a little bit, then she'd fall back. She's never demonstrated any demonstrations in regards to any of her children. The domestic violence, the mental health, it's just, there's just too much there, too much time that's already been given to her to afford her more time. So I would not be one.
All right, thank you. I believe we're out of time now, so thank you very much.